following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland from the home office in Memphis, Tennessee. Hey, how's it going? I don't know if you noticed the couple of things here. Did you notice the runtime on today's show? It's a little long. Might want to grab you a sandwich. You know, cold beverage. Yeah, or hot beverage, whatever turns you crank. Kick your shoes off, relax. We'll get into it. Got a fun. If you've read the description, then you know what's coming up. We've got a great show for you. Coming up, we got music from Mojo Medicine Machine here on the program, plus a really, really fun interview that was done with our good friend, Mr. Bill Bannister of Memphis broadcasting fame. We'll talk with him, and we'll set you up for that here in just a bit. So that's going to be a good thing. Hey, listen, this is an opportune time for me to mention this. Those of you who use the internet, why, who would that be? All of you people listening to this are using the internet. The FCC, our old friends over at the Federal Communications Commission, are set to take a vote on net neutrality, which would end the rules of net neutrality. They're hoping to do that this week, the week of Thanksgiving. This is the problem here. It's kind of frightening here because our old friends. See, this is the thing about the FCC. The Federal Communications Commission is it's designed to protect the free airwaves. You know what I'm saying? I think they should stay out of the internet, quite frankly. But that's neither here nor there. But it's a commission of five people, and it has turned into a very politically charged organization, a commission, if you will, with presidents. They're putting people into the vacancy on the commission, they put whoever they want in there, and now we have a predominantly conservative group. So the new guy who's the head of it, Agent Pie. It sounds like a kid's novel, that Agent Pie. I'm Agent Pie. My favorite flavor is key lime. Agent Pie. Idjit? Is it Idjit maybe? How about Idjit? Would Idjit work? Idjit Pie? P-A-I is his name. At any rate, he's conservative, you see. And he has been manipulated. This is my theory alone. I don't know if you guys want to subscribe to it. Go for it. If not, he's been manipulated by the internet service providers, the ISPs of the world, to take down net neutrality. What does this mean for you? We've discussed this before. Net neutrality is a concept, whereas the internet should be accessible. All of the internet should be accessible to everybody. That's kind of it in a nutshell, really. But the internet service providers are going, well, we're not making enough money, you see. There's just not enough in it for us. We're only making $26 billion an hour. They want to allow the internet service providers the ability to throttle your content because you're using it. Say you're streaming stuff, you know, Netflix, Hulu, hell, Radio Memphis. If you're using bandwidth, and this mythical idea that the internet service provider can't crank up the bandwidth. It's like, they're just using too much internet. Oh, the cats are running out of tubes to run in. It's not going to work. Which is complete bullshit, really. It's this concept. The infrastructures are there. The internet has been this way. The people who've developed the internet are begging you, as am I, to call Washington, call your congressman, call your senators, call the president, hell, call the FCC. Get busy and do what it takes to stop this. Now, I'm going to be honest here, and I'm going to tell you that that's probably not going to do a whole hell of a lot, except for one thing. Your voice will be heard, of course, but now we're starting already to see a backlash. We're starting to see various municipalities and states developing their own rules for net neutrality, which could make things complicated. And of course, you know, the ISPs, the Comcasts, the Time Warners, all those guys are going, well, wait a minute. we can't be subjected to laws by certain states because we're a federal utility type thing or whatever they want to call themselves. Well, you know, look, you've got your rights and you've got your voice that can be heard in all of this, and you need to get involved. The FCC seems to try and protect some rights, and it's continued its massive campaign for a wholesale repeal of Obama era net neutrality rules, which is of course a direct attack on free speech rights and digital rights at large, which is something that I thoroughly believe in, as you know. This is becoming a terrifying thing to do, and you can get involved. You can be vocal about it as much as you possibly can, and get a hold of your lawmakers. Look online on how to do that. Get a hold of your congresspeople, your congress critter, as they call them, your senator, your representatives. Be polite on the phone about it. Don't be an ass. You can send an email, perhaps. You can get a hold of the FCC. Let them know. Don't give up. Okay, just keep it going, and hopefully we can save the internet, because Lord knows if you do a lot of streaming, they're going to turn around and go, well, see, Mr. Cheddar, it looks like you're streaming an awful lot here, so we're just going to have to up your rates here so we can continue to provide you with bandwidth, because we have to keep manufacturing it, which is bullshit, and you remind them of that. Okay, so get on that note and do it. Okay, consider that a public service announcement here from your friends here at from Radioland. All right, look, kids, big show today. We've got a good friend of mine. We're gonna make a little history. Well, actually, we already made it. Really, my friend Bill Bannister is a broadcaster of note. 30 years of it, as a matter of fact, 30 years of it here in Memphis. Longtime personality, been on the air long before I got here, and he's been knocking around this market for a good long time, and has an interesting tale to tell you about corporate radio and what it did to him. Plus, he's got, he's like every one of us that got kicked out, he has some great plans ahead, and he's going to share them with you. This is actually, it took place on the air last Friday, whatever that date was. November in your time zone, and he came in and sat down with us with Kate and I. Spent a good bit of time with us, and we're gonna do it right here. This is right here for you. So, in fact, I just got an email from him. So, at any rate, there you go. It's coming up. It's Bill Bannister on the program right here from Radioland.
Keep calm and haunt on with Historical Haunts, Memphis Haunted Tour Company. Ancient burial mounds, yellow fever, maritime disasters, Victorian murders, and ghost stories are all a part of the Memphis dark history. Join Historical Haunts for a spirited night out on the Haunted Memphis Bus Tour, Haunted Pub Crawl, the Woodruff Fontaine House Ghost Tour, or one of our other spooky tours and events. Check out our website for all of the exciting ghost tours and ghost haunts at historicalhauntsmemphis.com.
For about, 30 years you've been on the air here?
Yes. Actually, I started on the air here in Memphis in 1979, April of 1979. I worked for Sam Phillips.
Yeah.
He had a radio station out at the corner of Mount Moriah and Hickory Hill, which was almost rural back in those days. Yeah. He was sitting on Nonconic Creek there.
He had to take a horse and buggy to get out there. Yeah,
yeah, pretty much. The road, the Mount Moriah was a gravel road.
Oh, wow.
Past that intersection.
Wow.
Over to Ridgeway. Yeah. But the station sat on the banks of Nonconic Creek there. There were two radio stations there. One was WWEE, which was 1430. And then, of course, Sam's Pride and Joy 94.3 hit Kick and Rock WLVS. Naturally, the call letters were LVS.
LVS.
For Sam Phillips. And met a guy over at Pete and Sam's. One of the first places I came here and had dinner.
Yeah.
He overheard me talking about radio, and he said, "Hey, I work for Sam Phillips. Why don't you come over and see me?" Because he had a weekend swing shift kind of thing going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I showed up over there, and they hired me on the spot. And it was the funny story is that when I pulled up to the radio station, I saw this guy out there cutting the grass. Right, he's pushing a mower, and he had a straw hat on. He's sweating, and so I go inside. And I'm sitting there in the station and thinking the yard guy was walking around the hallways, you know.
Right.
Coming in and out of the transmitter building and or in the little place where you read the meters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, what in the heck is the yard guy doing wandering
He's
around the station?
He's taking meter readings.
And so I ran into him in the hallway, and I asked him, can I help you? And he said, and of course, he said, I'm Phillips. I went, oh, my God. So it was Sam Phillips, and that's how we met. And anyway, the guy hired me, and it was probably the most fun I ever had in radio. I think it's fun in radio is commensurate to how much they pay you. So the least you make, the more fun you're going to have.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
And it was a great format. One of the things that really impressed me about that radio station when I walked in, I had seen pictures of these things, but I had never actually seen one in live, up in person. Hanging from the mic boom was a brand new Neumann U87.
Oh, my goodness.
And I don't know if you've ever spoken into one of those, but it transforms your voice into something from another planet.
It does. It's kind of hard to describe. You actually hear yourself the way other people hear you.
Yes.
That's the only, because these mics in here don't do that. You think because your brain is tricked into that, even when you're not wearing headphones and you're speaking, you get an idea of kind of what it sounds like. But when you hear yourself being replicated, like, by tone and by frequency, it is alarming. The first time you do it, it's like, holy cow.
I know. Yeah. And I could stand on the other side of the room and talk up a record. I wouldn't even have to be in front of the mic.
That's right.
That's how wonderful this thing was. Of course, an instrument like that will cost you about $5,000.
Back then, yeah.
Yeah, so
Neumann now has like $15,000, $20,000 microphones that you can get, you know.
That's the recording studio stuff.
Yeah, it's about as big as a, you know, a corn cob.
I've got a friend in Nashville, actually, who lives in Franklin, who's a voice artist, and he's got several mics, and one of them is a U87 that was custom made for him. And he does a lot of big-time work. He works for Disney and Yamaha and big international clients.
Well, when you got that in your closet, you know, to go with. That's, yeah. That's...
He's a very, very talented guy. I'm not even in his league, not even close.
We all pale in comparison to guys like that. We're just happy to do it. It's Bill Bannister, ladies and gentlemen. You were on the air at WRVR for a long time. You and I were working kind of opposite. This is the first time for you and I to be on the air together.
This is the first time I've sat in front of a mic with you in my whole life.
It is. Yeah, it's the same with me. Yeah. I mean, we've been knocking around in this business. I was at Clear Channel for 14 years, and he'd been on for twice that long, just down the street. Yeah.
We used to hang out at the deli when I lived in Cooper Young. Yeah. I could walk to your house.
Did you ever grumble about each other?
No, that's
the thing about this industry is we're all colleagues. Now, the companies we all worked for, we all hated our own companies, which was because we all had this kind of a weird jealousy. Man, I want to come work with you guys.
Right.
Yeah, then it'd be like, no, you don't want to do that.
We had that thing going on with FM 100 for a really long time. You know, because when I came on with WRVR, it was owned by Viacom, of course. And we were like the flagship station of Viacom.
Yeah, yeah.
Viacom was a big deal. They had MTV and VH1 going. And, you know, that was back in the early days when Viacom was just a huge,
it was massive.
Media giant.
Yeah, it was massive.
And so our studios over on Ridgeway Center Parkway were state of the art.
Yeah.
Just a beautiful facility. And it was the first time I had ever worked in such spiffy environs. Usually the stations I worked at were in the basement of some hotel. Or
or the basement of a building here in a bomb shelter yet.
Exactly. You know, the tar-stained tiles.
And, yes.
And, you know, cigarette butts on the floor. You know, when you turn on the lights, when you come in the morning, little things scurry from side to side of the room, you know. So that's kind of a thing. So it was really, really nice. And we had a great crew, too. The Steve Butler did mornings.
Oh, God, yeah.
Rick Robinson. You know, Gary Farron. He did middays. Maxine Todd did afternoons. I pulled up the evening shift from 6 to 10. Ken Kincaid did from 10 to 2. And then we had a guy from 2 to 6, so we were live around the clock.
Man, those were the days.
Those were the days.
Those
Rick,
were
we
the
had,
days, yeah.
We had
See, I'm waiting till he moves me to, like, the 4 a.m. slot, and I can just be as weird as I want.
We had two news vehicles that were completely equipped, radio-equipped news vehicles.
With the little Marty transmitters in them?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
A news director and a six-person news crew. We did live news on the hour around the clock, even overnights.
And that's just, it's unfathomable to think that that would happen in today's day.
Oh, it's people coming up today, there's a whole generation of people who have no idea what radio was.
Yeah.
And what an important medium it was. But it's all, for all intents and purposes, it's gone now.
It is.
You've got voice tracking and you've got the music, the formats. Or just they're just formula stuff, and now you've got these tractor rap stations that are coming up everywhere.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if you've ever heard any of that stuff.
A little bit,
it's crazy.
You know, right before I left Clear Channel, there was all that talk about moving everybody over to the Jack format, which was their version of randomized radio.
Yeah,
and it was their way to compete with the iPod players. You know. That's what they thought. Well, we could be just like those. So we're just going to mix it up and go with it. In theory, we do that here because everything is randomized here. I don't have a selector or a play clock type
That's
thing.
That's fantastic.
Now,
so
we just randomize it here. Sometimes we make executive decisions.
Well, of course we do. You know, I mean, we'll always add in tunes and swap and stuff. But all the jocks here have that ability to play whatever they want, you know.
Yeah.
Within reason, of course.
Now, yesterday morning, I think our random generator's girlfriend broke up with it before last.
Yeah, it does. Like, it does real weird, just, moody things.
Sometimes it has days where you're just like, cheer up. Stop.
I could never pick a hit. Usually the songs that I picked or liked, they were real turkeys on the air. And, I don't know how, you know, the formula by which they decide what to play.
I'm a B-side girl myself.
Focus groups, you know, and that sort of thing. And I thought that music was pretty bland, but I had one time in my life when I could play what I wanted to play.
Yeah.
And that's when I was doing a show called Noon Tunes.
Yeah.
And I did request, and Jerry Dean, who's the program director, who's now out in Las Vegas, Jerry was one of the finest guys I ever worked with. And he said, you know, you can basically do what you want. We worked with a system called Maestro at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a fine system. And we had an enormous library. And I could reach in and play just pretty much whatever I wanted. And they used to say, well, the stuff you want to play is really not hit-type material. But I played whatever I wanted during the noon hour with a few requests sprinkled in.
Sure.
And we still never dropped below a 10 share. So
that's impressive.
The music was good.
It proves the point. Because you certainly saw this toward the end of your time over there at the River. The way it was, at least for us, for Clear Channel, was you guys need to shut up and play more Eagle records.
When they brought in the personal people meters, they actually told us, every second you're talking, you're losing meters.
Which is stupid.
Yeah.
And I've proven that false here just by looking at our own numbers.
Absolutely.
And when we have people on the air, the numbers go up. When we're just playing music, the numbers go down.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a fact, but I don't know.
People like that interaction.
Thanks, listeners.
That's one of the things about radio that was so unique and powerful in that it was a one-on-one medium. Now, you could talk into that microphone.
Sure.
And you were talking to maybe, well, let's see, in a city the size of Memphis, I think, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but according to the numbers we were pulling out, maybe 100,000 people were tuned in at any given time during that show. And you weren't talking to them as an audience. You were talking to 100,000 individuals.
Yes.
So they perceived that it was just you and them, because when people listen to the radio, they listen in their car. They listen in their house. They may be doing housework. They may be taking a bath. They may be doing other unmentionable things.
Rick has a story about that.
Yeah, well.
People feel as though they know you on an intimate level.
Yes.
Yeah,
when
they're
listening.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times when you're out and about, or people, you pick up the phone and you answer the phone, people are very familiar with you in sometimes some frightening ways.
Yeah, if you think about the fact that you're on the air, you know, what, 25, 30 hours a week.
Yes.
These people think that you're part of their lives.
Exactly.
To the point where, you know, hey, it's my buddy Bill, you know, and it's weird. It's kind of creepy. But you brought up a very good point for people that are in this business. Far too often, the rookies will talk at their audience, mm-hmm. which is far different than talking to them. And that's exactly what Bill's done. And he was so good at that. And that's why his numbers were so big. Nobody could touch this guy in middays. Nobody.
Well, you know, I had a long, long run, and it was a lot of fun. And
are you missing it any?
Well, I enjoy being a part of Memphis, and there are many ways to be a part of Memphis, as you have well proven,
yeah,
sir.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't need some corporation to put your name on the
hell no.
On the thing. One of the things I
thank God for that.
One of the things I realized after I got out of the game, or after I was corporatized back in 2012. And it was a not too hard of a pill to swallow, but it was very difficult to digest.
Yeah.
Because once you're used to doing that, it becomes a part of your identity. And after 30 years, you're out there and you're thinking, well, what now? What do I do now? Because all the other radio jobs have been corporatized too.
Oh, yeah.
And in fact, when I left the radio station, I was not really a radio personality per se. I was just a Facebook admin guy and somebody who was required to put out 25 tweets a week that were graded by some corporate person in social media.
Who didn't know what they were talking about.
According
either.
To their relevance to pop culture and that sort of thing. So, you know, you were graded on the types of tweets that you would put out. And so that was basically it. And I'd jump in and say a few words and go back on the Facebook page. And that
was Elton John. Here's the latest from Billy Joel.
Exactly.
It was
exactly.
That was this is. And oh, God, yeah, I hated that stuff.
And I had a hard time with this whole game show mentality when it came to music because all the artists were finalists on American Idol.
They
became like three quarters of the playlist were American Idol people, and not to take away from their talents, but
how did you do this sober? That's what I want to know.
Well, I didn't sometimes.
Now the truth comes out.
I knew when the stammer started that there was no answer.
I got my cup of coffee, and by coffee I mean gin.
There's a lot of whiskey in my coffee today.
Well, sure, no, but you know you learn to. To deal with it. You learn to cope.
Yeah, you have to cope with it. Yeah, it was always a nightmare for me in this business to, you know, I'm going to be at a station and I'll be lucky to keep a job and they're going to flip formats to a format I just can't do.
Right.
And it was a constant waking nightmare for me. You know, you'd think that one day the studio door slides open and a guy with a dolly and a box of records comes in and goes, all right, that's the last Who song you're playing. Now we're going to play some, Garth Brooks. Oh, God.
I got an interesting story about when I was working at WLVS. I had five jobs in Memphis, and I still couldn't make enough money to pay rent in those days. All these W-2s, right? And there was a nickel and diming me to death.
Oh, yeah.
So I made the decision I was going to go and find work in another town. So I went down to Baton Rouge, and I got hired on to the morning show down there.
Yeah.
And Sam decided he was going to flip the station to country. And most of the
LVS
other,
or the one in Baton Rouge?
LVS.
Oh, yeah?
LVS.
Yeah.
And most of the jocks thought, oh, okay, you know, we'll just do that or, you know, we'll quit and they'll hire somebody else. But there was one guy who took complete hardcore offense to this idea of country moving in. So he locked himself into the studio. And he was, we had music that was only played at night. It was really hard stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And it was the middle of the day, and he came on, and he was like, we're going to rock you like you've never been rocked before, you know. And call in now and let them know you can't do this to your favorite radio station, you know. We don't stand for country music and all of this. And he was playing all this really hardcore music, you know, by Black Sabbath.
Hell yeah.
You know.
Fairies Wear Boots.
Exactly. Iron Maiden, you know. You know, and that's
right
sort of thing.
On.
So
right, yeah.
He was in there. We're gonna rock you like you've never been rocked before. We're gonna rock your ass off. And So while he was in the studio rocking his ass off, I was listening to this live on the air as I was driving to Baton Rouge, right? And I'm listening to all this, and all of a sudden the music stops. Well, see, Sam and the engineer were out there taking the door off the hinges, right?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
so
wow.
I don't know what they did with him when they got inside, but what I heard was it was in the middle of Jamie's Crying by Van Halen. The music just stopped. And the next thing you heard about 10 seconds later was that single guitar strum of David Allan Coe's Jack Daniels, If You Please.
Oh, my God.
And that was the end of Hit, Kick, and Rock forever.
Oh, my God.
I don't know whatever happened to that guy. I ran into him at Washington Bottoms. There was a garden project that he was involved in, and we got to talking about those old days. But I never did find out what they how that worked out for him, but I don't think it worked out really well, because that was pretty much a career.
That's a career ender, yeah.
That's called nuking your resume. Right?
Well, I've got a friend who did something similar. He was at I think it was in Florida. He was at a station there, and they flipped it and they ran him out, and he rented a U-Haul, and he was moving back here to Memphis, and he's driving in his truck with all of his stuff, and he has the radio on, and he's listening to his old station, and he goes, this is just awful. I can't believe this is going on. And it just occurs to him that he's got a last moment of revenge in him as he's heading out of town. So he pulls over to a gas station, and he drops a quarter into a payphone and dials up the transmitter.
Yikes, I remember those days when
he had to dial it up, and it would read back the numbers, you know?
Yeah.
He changes the passcode, and then *0, which would turn off the transmitter.
Yikes.
And he gets back into the truck, and he hears the thing going on, and it just starts to fade out as the tubes start going cold. He said that they had to – it was like an hour before they could get back on the air, because they had to go find the engineer, get his ass over to the transmitter, which was somewhere else out in the county, to go out there and go manually fire up the tubes and get this thing back on the air.
What I want to know is, Rick, did he get away with it?
Yeah, he did.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he got away
fantastic
with it.
Fantastic. Yeah. Love to hear stories like that.
I'll tell you who it is. He's on the air here in Memphis, and you probably know him, so I don't want to out him here.
Let's not do that.
We've been sitting here discussing life in general and how things have changed with our old friend, Mr. Bill Bannister. You'll remember him from, those of you in Memphis would remember him from WRVR and many other places. And we can say it here. The dirty that was done to you and your illustrious career over there as it was done with me, tends to spark things inside of you.
It does.
Once you get past that, oh God, screw you people. What am I going to do now?
Exactly.
Then things start to come up, and you're working on an absolutely tremendous project.
Well, the project I'm working on now is something I've been working on since 2008. So it's like 10 years in the making.
Yeah.
And the anchor to the project is my book, Underground Memphis, which I started writing when I lived in Cooper Young there in 2007. And I had an idea that, our website, before it was replaced by Facebook, was a pretty good website. I mean, you know, we had a lot of good features. You know, we had our blogs up there. And I came up with the idea, since I was in Cooper Young and I was surrounded by all this esoteric stuff. Black Lodge Video was down on Cooper at that time.
Yeah.
Java Cabana, where I hung out to have coffee before I made Otherlands my second office.
Yes.
Zach over at Goner Records.
Mm-hmm.
There was so much.
Now there's a comic book place down there. And
yeah.
That old Easy Way is turning into a Hattie B's Chicken.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a great neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it really is a lot of unique, one-of-a-kind things in Cooper Young. So I came up with the idea that I could write about these things and go and do some research, a little urban anthropology, if you will.
Sure.
To make people aware, people who lived in Collierville in their hermetically sealed neighborhoods.
In their little bubble.
Outside of Memphis.
Yeah.
And, you know, they could go to Hardee's or Wendy's or Taco Bell or McDonald's or Krispy Kreme, or they could go to their strip malls and all, but you know, you couldn't find anything authentic there. There's no such thing as authenticity in those places.
No,
there are a few little mom and pop places, but they hardly any of them survive in the Walmartization of America. But Cooper Young, and there's a lot of parts of Memphis that are rich in that sort of thing. So I started doing research in the neighborhood. I went to see Zach over at Goner, did a story on him. I saw Mary over at Java Cabana, went to Black Lodge Video. I used to love having breakfast at Barksdale's.
Oh, yeah. So I when Bob was, it was still kicking,
Poor Bob.
Yeah.
No, that was a shocker, man. Yeah. I saw him like 2 weeks before that.
Yeah.
And I used to go and talk to Bob all the time. So I did a story on Barksdale's, interviewed Bob and did a story on Barksdale's. Then we went over to the Flag Center on Summer Avenue. Oh. Not many people know about the flags. You can buy any kind of flag you want there.
If he doesn't have it, he'll get it for you.
There's an interesting backstory to these places. I did an interview with Prince Mongo at the castle.
Oh, I bet that was fun.
Oh, I got to tell you, Rick, I'm going to send you a link to that, man. Yeah, he gave me the Zambodian blessing. Do you know he's 333 years old?
Oh, is he really? Yes.
And it takes 33 seconds to travel back to Zambodia using his special mental
his powers,
mental powers. He is a true space alien that we're very fortunate to have.
He's a delightful man.
Among he really us. Is.
He doesn't look a day over 65, but you know.
Fun piece of trivia: if Facebook is correct, we have the same birthday.
Awesome.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Prince Mongo.
Someone points that out to me every year. They're like, hey, it's Prince Mongo's birthday too.
So Jerry says, yeah, if you want to do that. He said, but you know, you're going to run out of stuff pretty quickly. And the more I got into it, the more I found that I was not going to run out. This thing was not going to saturate itself. There is so much great thing. There are so many great things about Memphis. So many unseen things about Memphis.
Yeah, because we've got, you know, Graceland and all the stacks and Beale Street and all that other stuff.
That's great. The
Chamber of Commerce stuff that we all know about. But you just scratch the surface and you get into this really neat confluence of cultures here, you know?
Yes. Right.
Cultures and ideas and thoughts and people. I mean, it is the people here.
This city, and I came here from Houston, Texas, and one of the first things that people would say to me is, why the hell are you here in Memphis?
Because I upgraded from Houston, man. That's what...
gnarly little southern backwater. What the heck are you doing here, right?
Yeah.
I almost said something else. I guess I could now.
You could, yes. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, and they would ask me, why are you here? And I go, well, I love it here.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you love it here? There are four distinct seasons here, all of these big old growth trees, all of these interesting little places to eat at and people to meet, all these eccentricities that you find in Memphis. I mean, this is the place where great things have happened. Great things have happened.
And continue to happen.
Sam Phillips made great things happen for people. People came. Johnny Cash came here.
Yeah.
Jerry Lee Lewis, who never gave one shit about what anybody thought about it.
That's true. He didn't.
But he always called Sam Mr. Phillips.
Yeah.
You know, this is a place where historical... The story of Memphis is the story of the American history.
Yeah.
Elmwood Cemetery. You could take a walk back through time in that place, and I highly recommend that you do.
I do that every once in a while, especially when the weather gets warmer and nicer. Yes. It's a beautiful walk, and it's just a great time.
And Kim Bearden, who is Willie Bearden's wife, runs the cemetery there, and she's a wonderful lady.
Yes.
I highly recommend a trip to there. I mean, Memphis is the place of murder and martyrs. It is where Martin King's blood pooled around his lifeless body and dripped onto the hoods of cars parked below at the Lorraine Motel. These things shaped American history, and they all happened here in Memphis.
Yes.
And that ground that we walk on every day is almost fertile in the way that it encourages that sort of creativity, much of which is manifesting itself in what you do here, Rick.
Oh, well, thank you. We're not killing people yet, but, you know.
well, in a manner of speaking.
We hear, and we're fortunate because we deal with artists literally from all over the world. They'll get on the road, and sometimes they'll come through here. They just want to come through here just to get some Memphis on them.
Yeah.
You know, there may not be a proper venue for a lot of these acts, but they still want to come through.
And they call it. Yeah, people come from all over the world here.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can go over to Graceland, man. It's like the UN.
It is.
People from Italy, Germany, And they're in
twice a year, man. They just have their convention down there in the streets.
Every now and then, one of them will get lost and wander over to Cooper Young, and you'll run into them in the cart yard there at Celtic or something. You know, and it's like wow, you know, we found something. I was at other lands the other day, and this lady came in from I don't know where she was from. She had a pretty strong accent. She was from Europe, and she was here for some kind of a corporate convention.
Yeah.
And she just wandered into other lands and said, "Wow, this place is great."
Yeah.
And I think it just so happens that you wandered in here. You know, you came to the right place because this is what Memphis is all about. This is the best of Memphis right here.
Yeah.
Of what you can experience by going into places that are off the trail, off the map.
Yes.
I travel a lot.
Yeah, you go all over the world, man.
I spend a lot of time in London. I use London as a base, and we take the Eurostar to Paris and Brussels and Bruges. We can fly over to Dublin and take the bus up to Belfast. And there's so much to see that's beyond the what you can find in the tourist. The thing about London, a city like that, they say if you're tired of London, you're tired of living. And I think that's very true. But I make a point of going out to places where the local people hang out. And going to esoteric places, I know I use that word a lot, but I think it aptly describes what I'm talking about, authenticity. I'm a stickler for authenticity, and I've always loved authenticity, and I'm not alone. When people come to Memphis, a lot of them want that extra experience they can get by mingling with the local people and seeing what's real. And that's what I wanted to do with Underground Memphis. I wanted to highlight these kinds of places. I wanted to make people aware of that Memphis is more than Graceland. And I'm not knocking Graceland. Memphis is more than Sun Studio. There again, I'm not knocking Sun Studio. Memphis is more than what meets the eye. And there's so many rich experiences you can have by going off the grid.
So are you putting together like a travelogue type of thing?
Yes.
Here? But you're including into the stories that make these things so rich in the history, right?
Exactly. The book is a culmination of 10 years of research, and there is many stories in the book of the places that I've gone to. Some of them you may not even think about. There's a museum, so to speak, off the corner of Hollywood and Central. Was it Hollywood and Central? Central and Parkway, called Flashback. It's a vintage store. But you go
in
there.
But it's a museum.
It's like a museum where you can buy the stuff that's on display. That's an interesting thing. Did a story on Quick Shop, who used to be on the corner there. I don't know if it's something else now. But some of the places I write about are no longer in existence. But all of the ones included in the book, I think, are. And the book is a travel log for people who are interested in learning more about Memphis that you don't see in the travel brochures.
You know, what shapes the history of this town in very, very deep ways. Yeah.
The book is an anchor of the project. It's a multimedia project. So what we're doing, I've teamed up with a very talented photojournalist and documentary filmmaker named Larry Wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
Larry is the executive producer of Touching Lives Incorporated. He traveled to the world shooting documentaries for that organization. He just got back from Las Tunas, Cuba.
Wow.
He goes to Nicaragua, Israel, Greece. He's all over the world, you know, Turkey. And he is extremely talented filmmaker, so he's joining the project. And we're shooting a series of mini documentaries about some of the places I feature in the book.
Right.
And some of the places that are yet to be featured. And like I said, this is an ongoing project. So there's a lot more to see and do that we haven't even scratched the surface on. And we invite people to go to our Facebook page, Underground Memphis Facebook page. And if you have a suggestion or something that you know about that maybe we don't know about, we'd like to go in and investigate it. We're also going to be running our website with our podcast.
Yes.
And our blogs where people can stay up to date on the latest discoveries. And there's got to be a discovery all around the corner all the time.
There's always something new that's happening too.
It's rich with things to see and do.
Is this going to be kind of, obviously it's an ongoing project, but the book itself, it will be like a first volume. You're going to update it every few years?
Yes, the book will be a first volume. We're going to update it as it goes, and then we'll be featuring new things on the website and the documentaries. The latest one we shot was just north of downtown on North 2nd Street. It's the Jacob Burkell Estate, which was a major stop on the Underground Railroad.
Yes.
Runaway slaves would come here. The German immigrant by the name of Jacob Burkell bought this place. He was a horse trader, and he sold mules and that sort of thing to the people who were plying the river boats. And he also kept slaves under his house, and under the cover of darkness, he would help them escape to freedom. So it's a very wonderful historical place. And it's also a museum that features a lot of the advertising and artwork that was featured during the Jim Crow era.
Right.
And, I don't want to get too political, but there was a time after the Civil War when the Jim Crow era came into being. What Jim Crow told poor white people is, well, you may be poor, but at least you aren't that.
Yeah.
So I think we have a deeply divided society that has its roots in the fact that there was never any truth and reconciliation committees that were set up to help people deal with the aftermath of the Civil War. So I think in many ways they say that in the South they're still fighting the Civil War. And I'm from the South, born and raised here, so I'm not going to go that far. But I think people do need to have a dialogue and a better understanding about who their neighbors are. And I think this project is an excellent way for people to get an understanding of who people are.
Oh, I think that's I agree with you entirely. I mean, it's high time we've had these discussions, and using the vehicle of history that's common ground for everybody.
And what better way to understand history than to put your hands on it.
Oh, yeah.
To touch it and feel it and smell it. I was in Dachau back in 2014.
I've been there. Yeah, and that's an eye-opening experience.
Walking past those ovens and standing in the gas chamber,
mm-hmm.
and where I'm looking at the door and I'm seeing that wheel on the door, you know, when they close it and they seal it, and thinking, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
You can feel it in the walls.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and you can do that at Slave Haven. You can go. A lot of people don't realize that, I don't know, it's like an energy in these places that you can feel it. When you walk in, you walk on the ground, go over to the Lorraine Motel, you know, you can still feel that.
Oh, sure.
The old railroad bridge across the river is one of the places where it's...
Yeah, go to
you can tell.
Yeah.
Go to the site.
You can feel it.
There's a site of a lynching that happened over near off Summer Avenue, and there's a historical marker. Go to a place like that, you know, to get a better understanding of who we are and how we came to be where we are. I think you have to understand history. And what better place to understand history than Memphis? A place where history was made, man. This is the crucible of history.
We're in the middle, basically the middle of the country,
yes.
For all intents and purposes. This is why there's so many distribution groups that live here, because, you know, it's easy to get anywhere in this country. And it's been that way because of the river from the time the city was founded.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing with Underground Memphis. And, right now we're in the phase where we're trying to get some funding for it.
Yeah.
And, it's not cheap to put something like this on.
Nope.
We want to do a very high-quality job. I've got some talented people on board. I mentioned Chris Andrews in Nashville. He's going to be doing our voice work. Of course, you know, there's so many people that we can bring on board to make this happen. And if anybody out there listening is interested in being a partner with us, we certainly welcome you to come on. And if you want to give us some financial support, I don't care what it is. If you got 10 bucks, we really
it all adds up. Are you doing any crowdfunding? Are you setting up a
we're working
Kickstarter
on that
or GoFundMe?
Right now. This is a totally new endeavor for me. I've never really actually I've had this in the back of my mind for a long time, but
right.
I've never actually been where the rubber meets the road until now. So I invite any kind of input from anyone who can give me an idea of where do we go from here? How do we get that crowdfunding going? And that sort of thing. So that's where we are right now. But I'm putting the little pieces together manually as I speak. So right now it's a DIY thing. And you know that very well. You know how to do DIY.
You know, there's that sweat equity that goes
exactly.
into it.
And look what you've built here, man. We're in a historic place here. This studio is
this studio
a lot
has
of
a
great
lot
stuff
of
is happening here.
Yeah, you guys need to come down and come spend some time with the old spirits around here.
Oh,
know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they the same ones by any chance that hang around at Ernestine and Hazel's after dark?
I don't know so much about that. We do have, we actually had paranormal investigators down here who have seen some things. which is unusual.
Well, you and I see
them. We see Charlie Rich wanders in these rooms.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
You ever seen him? Does he move stuff around?
You know, for the longest time, and we've had, I think all of us here, since for the 3 years we've been here, we've identified probably about three or four different people that come and go through here.
Someone likes my headphones.
Someone likes your headphones. Somebody screws around with the compressor settings on on here. Sometimes the station will just stop. You know
why I love Memphis so much? It's in my blood. Radio is the only thing I ever wanted to do ever since I was old enough to remember. When I was 6 years old, I got a transistor radio.
Yeah.
And my parents might as well have given me a spaceship, because you could turn on that radio, and I had a little earpiece that you stick in one ear.
Yeah.
And I could go up and down the dial, right, and you can hear places like San Antonio or New Orleans or Tulsa, or Detroit.
Those winter nights when
no
the sky
one has
was
ever said the word Tulsa with that much wonder in their voice before. Oh, yeah. Right now.
The station KVOO in Tulsa was a station that was 50,000 watts clear channel. So was WWL in New Orleans.
Yeah.
On a side note, my life became complete one day in 1979 when I got to actually go on the air with Frank Davis at WWL
and really
give the call letters. And back in those days, we used to say, King Ed Cigar Time, every time the time was gone. And so, you know, you would say, King Ed Cigar Time, 7 o'clock at one of America's truly great radio stations, 87 WWL, with studios located in the historic French Quarter in downtown New Orleans. And, you know, or on the half hour would say, King Edward Cigar Time, 7:30, time to light up and enjoy a rich, smooth King Edward Panatella.
Ah, God, those were the days.
Those were the days, man.
Those were the days.
A lot of history in that studio, man. A lot of history in that studio. And I've often thought about creating a radio museum, but I've been told that it's just too out there. There wouldn't be enough interest in it.
I think that's ridiculous.
I agree. There are museums for far stranger things.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen some weird museums, too.
Yeah.
I've been to Amsterdam. They've got some museums there that'll blow your mind.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely, they will. Do you have kind of a timetable you've got on this book? I know with funding is kind of an issue, but how far along are you on the book?
It's done.
It's done.
The manuscript is done. The pictures are done. All I need to do is to find somebody to help me collate it and have it printed.
Yeah.
And I'm talking to a couple of people who are interested in publishing it right now. But, hey, I'm open. So anybody that wants to publish this wonderful alternative guide to Memphis, please, my email is BillBannister@Outlook.com. You can reach out to us on our Facebook page at Underground Memphis on Facebook.
And your website, is it up and running too, or is it that's still in works, right?
Yeah, it's still in the works. And that's one of the things I need to get the money for, because
you need to get a designer.
Yeah,
building
a website, you know, is beyond my capabilities.
I feel you.
the people that do this are artists, and they deserve to be paid what they deserve to be paid.
Absolutely.
And so these are all the things that we need to have a little seed money for. So that's kind of where we are right now.
And in the meantime, you're also taking some of this money and putting together these little documentaries of
the
visual and audio end of what's going on.
We did Slave Haven, which is really
and it's on your YouTube channel, right?
Yes, on our YouTube channel. It's an amazing our Underground Memphis YouTube channel is we're again under construction, but our first video is in production right now. It should be done really really soon.
Yeah.
And be able to link to that. I'll send you the link to that.
Please do.
One of the things we want to do, and I talked to Larry about this, he wants to come in here to the studio, and we want to feature what you do. I think he's going to be in town. We'll talk about this off the mic, but I'd like to come in and feature Radio Memphis as part of.
Well, I appreciate that, Bill. I mean,
part of what makes Memphis special.
Thank you for thinking of us and including us. I'm honored that anybody would think that we're a part of that.
Oh, absolutely. You're definitely a part of it. You're as big of a part of that as Sam Phillips is to rock and roll.
Well, that's putting me in too big of shoes right there, Bill.
No,
come on.
No, it takes a lot of creative
I can't drink
juice.
Like Sam did, you know?
I bet you could if you tried.
I bet I could. I could do it at least once.
I used to say about Sam that, you know, Sam did drink, and people used to make fun of him for his eccentricities, and they used to tell him, they used to say, oh, he was a shitty businessman,
yeah,
as if being a good one was a virtue.
Right.
But Sam had soul. He knew what made people tick. He knew what people loved to hear, and this goes all the way back to 1951. You know, there was a book written about Sam called The Man Who Invented Rock and Roll.
Yes.
And it happened right here in 1951. Rock and roll was born in Memphis, Tennessee, and it was delivered by Sam Phillips, and it screamed its primal scream into the airwaves of the night, radiating from this crucible of American culture, Memphis, Tennessee. And that's where we are.
Beautifully said.
Thank you, sir.
I'm glad you're writing a book. I'm glad you wrote a book. I'm glad you're doing this.
I got my memoir coming out, too, and it's that's a whole different project.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that one. Are you naming names in it?
I name names, unfortunately.
No, there's nothing unfortunate about it. I name names all the time around here.
Yeah.
It's good that you do that.
But fortunately, a lot of the names I name are no longer with us, so, you know, they can't come back and kick my ass.
I've named names of the living, and I've said, if any of you guys have a problem with it, you're more than welcome to come onto this platform and argue with me about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm the same way.
That's awesome. Well, Bill, thank you so very much. Best of luck with this project, and we're going to spread it around and get it out there. And
thank you, Rick. Same here. I mean, you've already got a worldwide presence with Radio Memphis. I know there are people listening all over the world, probably some of my friends over in London.
Probably.
Listening right now.
Probably, and, yeah.
You get a chance to go to London, man. Take it.
Oh, yeah. Take that chance. Yeah. Don't stay here. Get, you know, I'm not saying, you know, don't move, but you need to go see the world. You know, you get a different process of how people live when you live out, when you go somewhere and see how other people live. You know,
I've seen it manifest itself in my kids, you know, and ever since they were little, I started them on the road when they were 3 years old. And they've been all over, and it has made them better balanced people, I think.
I think travel is a good cure for ignorance.
Yeah, it really is.
And those that may not have the financial means to do so, books like what you're putting together, I think, is going to be a great step in that direction.
And it's a great idea if you want to have a staycation.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So I know I'm ragging on these folks in Collierville, but if you're...
Hooterville.
If you're sitting out there in Hooterville and you've never been west of Parkway, you ought to give it a shot.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, it's like Sam used to say. I thought of Sam as a preacher who screamed from the pulpit that sin wasn't half bad and you ought to give it a try sometime. I think you ought to get over west of Parkway sometime and discover what Memphis has to offer.
Absolutely, I couldn't have said it better myself.
Thank you, Rick.
Bill Bannister, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, sir.
The Broom Closet is your one-stop shop for all of your metaphysical supplies and gifts. We stock candles, herbs, gemstones, incense, salt lamps, and more. We also host monthly rituals and events for those looking to get together with like-minded people. And the Broom Closet is the only place you can get your cards read by me, Reverend Emily. I'm an ordained Wiccan minister and Reiki master. Book your next tarot reading and see what's in the cards for you. Discover conscious living and being connected to an awesome community. The Broom Closet Metaphysical Shop is located in downtown Memphis, or visit our online store at thebroomclosetmemphis.com. The Broom Closet, where magic begins.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
Maybe it's just me, I guess, with everything that's going on. I mean, you've got the sex abuse cases, which seem to be running rampant in the world. And it's not just Hollywood, it's in sports, it's in everything. I don't know, it just seems like for some bizarre reason we've all kind of lost grip. You know, that's kind of like... You know, being in this position of being on the front line, on the front row of watching the world kind of come apart, it's interesting from my perspective, because now all of a sudden I find another niche that I need to fill. It's being somewhat reasonable, I guess. That's just it. I need to be reasonable. I need to be a voice of reason for some, I guess. Not that anybody's electing me to that position, but, you know, why not? You know, I hate the word distraction, but if we can get ourselves away from it for just a little while, maybe that's not such a bad idea.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
There you go, kids.
you heard what's coming up next time. What do we have for you here? Let's just get into some music, shall we? These guys, these guys are new to the Memphis area, although they've been here for a couple of years now. But and some of the guys in the band have been here all their life. But I'm talking about Rick Ballinger. Rick Ballinger is the front guy to a band called Mojo Medicine Machine. They released their first record. It was recorded at Royal Studios under the guidance of Mr. Boo Mitchell. And we're gonna play a cutoff of that record. Yes, sirree, buddy. Let me tell you something about these guys. They've got a good blues vibe. They've got a good rock and roll vibe. They've grabbed a hold of the Memphis sound and they've brought it into their own. So let's get into some, shall we? This is a song called "Lay It Down." It's Mojo Medicine Machine right here from Radioland.
Alone, 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 she's lonely. Yeah.
Mojo Medicine Machine. Lay It Down here from Radio Land. A little music here for you. So thank you, fellas, for letting us get that out there. And go out there and go buy the record. Go find it. Go to their shows. Look them up on social media. Mojo Medicine Machine, and go. They put on a hell of a show. So you're gonna want to. You're not gonna want to miss it. You're gonna want to go to the show, and you're gonna want to give them money for their record. If you like to collect music, which a lot of you do, you can find it online at the usual sources. So there it is. All right, kids. Our thanks also to Mr. Bill Bannister, and of course my co-host on the morning show, Kate Lucas, who also appeared in that interview that we did there on Radio Memphis. So that was cool. That's kind of fun. Hey, heads up. This is kind of the direction this show is going. Just thought I'd share that with you. A little insight, little tip. I got to go. Got places to go. Got people to deal with, right? So do you, right? Don't forget, write your congresspeople. Get a hold of the FCC and stop this dismantling of the net neutrality, okay? I'm relying on you for this. I really am, because if this doesn't happen, I'm going to blame each and every one of you people for this. Until next time, please take care of yourselves and take care of one another. And for Christ's sake, stop shooting each other, okay? We'll see you next time. I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been From Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.